Ooh, indeed, this is not easy. So much rich material was presented to us today. I'll make a few points that were outstanding to my mind. I have to say, the relationships that's developing between Ekaterina Kerenskaya and Senator Sergei Gordiev is a beautiful thing. It's public-private partnership at work. This is a precedent that has done wonders around the world in this particular business. No one ever said it was the easiest way to operate, but when you get down to it, none of this is going to work unless the public is behind it. It so happens that the Melnikov House is a private property. The time has come to transfer it to public use. By the vicissitudes of time, it's passed through time and space to be something greater than even the great architect Melnikov probably had in mind. It's been valorized by all this international attention, publication, conferences, and the like. So it's a truly a World Heritage Site in the strictest sense. So to best wishes to you both for working it out. As a one small member of your committee, I will die before I see the wrong thing done at this very special opportunity, the Melnikov House, with its precious collection of objects and fine finishes and furnishings, even the Biedermeier furniture, which I hope can all be preserved and presented as living heritage in addition to an icon of modern art and architecture. It's also touching to the point that it brings a tear to the eye to hear Alexei Ginzburg talk about his grandfather's work and his obvious sense of duty to look after it. What a burden. But I'm quite sure Alexei will see the project through and that someday we're all having champagne on the roof congratulating him and the others who've gotten behind the vision. That the Melnikov House and the Ginzburg Narkompin building are picked as sort of the pilot projects is quite brilliant, but because of the different typologies of the buildings, which is very clear. So the message that will be sent out by not one but two spectacular, very carefully done, scientifically done restorations will have tremendous propaganda value, not only for heritage protection throughout Russia, but also, I think, throughout the world. There is a battle going on across the planet to draw attention to saving monuments of the recent past. Clementine Cecil's report on the growing interest of the private sector, the general public, is, of course, all important, and that she's done so much, risked so much to make this happen. Clearly, she's driven by her heart, amateur in the old-fashioned sense, the totally complementary sense, the second definition you see in the dictionary, that is the sense of someone who works for the heart, for the love of the subject, not for remuneration. And I think it's not lost on anyone that Clem Cecil is risking probably more than just her beautiful youth and reputation here. She might be risking even more by being so outspoken. On a rather serious note, I'd like to compliment the man who introduced me to Russian modernism, Paul Klebnikov, who introduced us to the Rusikov Club. And we got as far as putting a roof on the building, but that's about it. You all know what happened to Mr. Klebnikov for being outspoken and getting in the way of somebody's perception of progress in Russia. So Clem, carry on, take care of yourself. Don't give up. It's some sort of wonderful convergence or coincidence that Clem Cecil was in the room last night at the Architectural League where our version of Clem 30 years ago, Jane Jacobs, was being celebrated. You're birds of a feather. Good for you, Clem. Carry on. I've been fascinated by the terminology being used to describe this architecture, and our Leningrad colleagues really gave us a blast of the different names to which these buildings answer to. Functionalism, constructivism, suprematism, revolutionary romanticism, classic expressionism, and even more, return to the neoclassical. Nomenclature, as it translates across the languages in the world, is always a fascinating thing and an endless subject for sure. But it seems to me the one thing this architecture has in common, no matter which period, how visible the architect may have been, and the artist, of course, too, and the sculptors, is that they were in pursuit of an ideal that is a very deliberate break with the long, long classical tradition in Western art that preceded it. They were throwing it off like an old dress on a woman or something. It was a very conscious thing. And to them, really, I think you can really say that these are people that really broke through, revolutionary thinkers in the strictest sense, due to the sheer quantity of evidence of its genius in the form of buildings that were constructed and the wealth of books and drawings that we've referred to and seen in the last 2 days. I wonder if we shouldn't call these people Russian idealist, or at least Russian visionary architects as well. You know, in the late 18th century, there's a batch of architects called, in France, the French revolutionary architects, or the visionary architects, Boulez, Ledoux, and so on, their circle. Well, and they were just working with gigantic neoclassical forms, really variations on a 2,000-year-old theme. It's the Russian constructivists and their German colleagues and others in Europe who were breaking through altogether. God knows if the French wonderful architects like Ledoux and Boulez can be called visionary architects or revolutionary architects, the architects we're talking about today could be called the very same. Just to finish, the monuments of local interest now in Moscow have all of a sudden become of national, international interest. There are a lot of reasons for this. Cheap international travel, the internet, developments in education, publications, and the like. But the fact is, like it or not, the world has some sort of interest, and if not even a stake, in the future of these monuments. But as was said so eloquently, there are no more of these. You only have one, and Lord knows that a facsimile is not going to do the job, a reproduction, in case one is lost. So nothing is more important in the whole field of heritage conservation, in my opinion, in architectural conservation, than to look after these monuments now, Monday morning. And we're doing it, as I've cited earlier, in the actions of these wonderful people who are on the line. So for the 5 selected buildings that were being proposed to be the first in a thematic World Heritage List nomination, I would say don't wait until ownership and laws are straightened out. Get underway. Anyone can nominate a site to the World Heritage List. If it takes some money, we can find that, I'm sure, very seriously. But just the act of nominating a site to the World Heritage List, or the local landmarks commission, for that matter, it valorizes the project, as they say, or adds gravity to the situation. The prospect of listing it is almost enough. You all know, I think those of you in the business, that U.S. or the World ICOMOS Committee advises the World Heritage List on what to list and what not to. They prepare the World Heritage List nominations, and they've been known to bend the rules. I'm working on a great site in Asia now where they bent the rules. The site wasn't even on a local or a national list. There was no local or national list in the country before UNESCO, at a meeting in Santa Fe, New Mexico, about 1992, decided to put a charismatic site on the World Heritage List on the condition that 2 or 3 special requirements are met: master plans, legal changes, administrative apparatus, and the like. So let's not wait on this question of nominating this cluster of 4 or 5 to the World Heritage List to get the ball rolling. It's going to happen sooner or later. It's unavoidable. It's useful. The very action will bring to light information. World Heritage Listing requires conservation plans, which will force us to think about how to curate these sites and make them viable in the future. And I'm quite sure in doing so, future generations will thank us for it. Thank you very much.